Do you like your gadgets? Do you like having like the latest tech stuff? I sort of do and I don't. I live with an engineer. He's a Mac engineer. And sometimes he'll say things and or he'll get stuff. I've got no idea. You know, when you, it's just sort of, it's just gone over the top of my head. It's almost, it's like too much tech, too much. I don't know. I just go, yeah, that's amazing. So I have to style it out quite a lot, right? But to help us kind of navigate the tech world, I've got Gadget Detective Fezzy on the phone. Hello, sir.
Afternoon.
Hello. Now, you really know because on Twitter you are at the Gadget Detective.
Oh, thank you.
So how does this all start? I mean, where did you, were you one of those kids you were like, oh, I love my gadgets and you knew everything about everything? Where did it all start?
So I've always loved gadgets and I think I took it from my granddad who was a photographer. So I grew up, you know, around cameras and gadgets and learned how to, you know, change a piece of film mid-roll in the dark and all of this sort of thing. And, you know, I learned how to retouch images before Photoshop existed using a paintbrush. You know, so I sort of grew up with that and I think it was sort of inherited. And so, and then I remember when I was 14, and I'm quite old, so when I was 14, there were no computers even in schools.
Yep.
And I went to the local university at an open day and I came out and I literally said to my friend, do you know, that's probably the last chance I'll ever get to touch a computer. And because at the time, just a few years before that, IBM's projection for how many computers it would sell across the world was four.
They thought they'd sell four. Yeah, in the whole world?
Yeah, because they were the size of football pitches and only governments could afford to buy them.
Yeah.
So, you know, computers were not things that you wore or had implanted. They were things that you visited. You know, they were facilities with usually men in white coats in air-conditioned rooms. You know, so it was all of that. And I used to walk down to the local university to do my computer science O-level, as it was back in the day. Because the school didn't have one. And their computers were teletypes, no screens. You see how old I am. It's not that long ago, you know. It's quite remarkable how far we got. They were teletypes, and we played this game called golf. You know, you may have heard of golf.
Yeah.
But there was no screen. So you'd like select a club by the number on a keyboard.
Yeah.
And then say on a scale of 1 to 10 how hard you wanted to hit the ball. And then it would tell you how many yards your ball was now from the hole. There was no graphics. There was nothing. And you used to go home with like a ream of paper, about 400 sheets of paper in a sort of fanfold affair. So, but I've always loved gadgets. And then I sort of went to university. I did a sort of degree in applied physics and I just could never leave the gadgetry alone. And now I found this niche.
Yeah.
Where people. So when I was a kid, my father owned a store and he used to sell toys amongst other things. And once a week, the toy man would come, the toy supplier, and I'd go up into the van and I'd get to pick a toy for myself. It was like the cheap little 50p toy type of thing. And now people just send me bigger toys to play with. And it's just the same. You don't ever have to grow up.
It's your little tech utopia, isn't it?
It's not so little, but yeah.
And the reason I'm laughing so much, Fezzy, is because we must be in a sweet spot of age. I think we're a very similar age because I can clearly remember there was one classroom in my school and it had two computers in it. And and it had some of those ones without the screens, but there were these two computers in it. And I remember my teacher saying to me, oh, Michelle, do you think you're going to... I said, no, I'm not going to need that. That's not going to catch on, is it?
Yeah.
I'm not going to need it. I said, no, it's not for me. No. I said, I think it's for people that like that kind of thing. Won't be for me.
No, that's right.
When I left school, just going to work in places where I worked for Texas Instruments, funnily enough, and in my early 20s, and the tech there and the stuff that, I mean, when I think about it now, about how clunky it was and it was awful. But at the time, you know, that would have been late 80s, I think. The time it was like, we were shipping in tech from Holland for like printers and all the periphery bits and computers and stuff. And we thought we were quite cutting edge at the time. So happy days.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I used to work at a company in the early 80s, a British, it was called ICL. It was meant to be Britain's equivalent of IBM. They got bought by Fujitsu, which probably says it all. But I worked in a division that had this really sort of, we were sort of the forward-thinking, futuristic division, and we had this idea. It was called the OPD division. That one day in the future, there would be one computer on every desk. And that was like an amazing thing, that in the workplace, that you wouldn't just have this centralized computer, but everyone would have a computer on their desk. And that was meant to be future.
Wow.
And that was in the 80s, you know, so.
Yeah. So let's talk about a little thing that's been floating around on social media. Zuckerberg wants Facebook to become an online metaverse. First time I've heard this term metaverse. What is it?
Right. So metaverse in this context means a virtual world in which we inhabit. So in essence, in its fullest form, a replacement for this world. It's a world
like Tron. Am I going to disappear inside my screen and never be able to get out?
So in terms of current technology, you wear a virtual reality or headset, and that sort of shines 3D images into your eyes. Your ears are fed with sounds, and you may wear gloves that allow you to touch and feel things in this virtual world. So it is a world in which we would work. It's a world in which we would be entertained, watch videos, go to concerts. It's a world in which we would meet and communicate with friends in a virtual space. Although we'd be, you know, in disparate parts of the planet, we could be in a virtual room together, physically interacting. It's a world in which eventually we will have relationships and marry. Okay, so this world is like...
Desi, I don't know if I can bend my brain around that.
Well,
it means
kind of
that
world...
I'm never going to leave the house, am I? I'm never, ever going to go outside.
Well, it's like the Matrix, isn't it?
Yes!
Like you'll be in your little pod. This is like world 1.0. This is like the Earth version. But there'll be other worlds and, you know, you'll be able to holiday. We will imprison people in virtual worlds. We will do all sorts of things. Now... that you can talk about that's coming. There's no doubt that is coming, and that we will either visit it or eventually live in it completely. But the question is this: do you want the world to be owned by Mark Zuckerberg?
No. In a word.
and that's the thing. See, now there's already all these privacy concerns about who owns our data. So metadata is the data that we, in this context, is the data that we shed as we go about our daily business online. Okay, so when we send a text message, it's not just the contents of the text, it's who we texted, at what time, what location we were in, what the pattern of our behavior is. And they can use that to work out, you know, who votes what, who's having an affair, you know, all of these different things, what medical conditions we may have, all about us is already discernible from the data that we shed. And there's no legal framework in this country or around the world to say that we own our metadata. And Facebook and others make their money by learning everything they can about us so that they can sell our details to advertisers or provide our details to advertisers. So let's say, for example, you're a seller of tents, and you want to sell tents, but these tents are very small, so you want to sell them to very short people. They're all in a particular location, so you need people in a particular location. The tents have got pictures of Donald Trump on them, so you need a particular type of profile of person, let's say. So you don't want to advertise to like 3 million people in the hope that you'll sell those 50 tents. But what Facebook give you is the ability to say, okay, these are the 50 people that will buy your 50 tents. You know, and they will do that. Now, the thing is, they already have all this information on us. Why is Facebook interested in this? Why did Facebook spend $2 billion on buying a company called Oculus, who make the best VR headsets? Mm. Yeah. And why do you now have to sign up to Facebook to use the Oculus headsets? Because when you're in a virtual space, you give up maybe 10 times or 100 times more information about yourself. How do you walk? How do you move? Where is your gaze? What is it that attracted your attention?
It's already happening then. Zuckerberg is already doing this then.
Yeah. So he's saying within 5 years, but the beginnings of it are already here. There are already virtual spaces that Oculus Rift users, you know, the users of these Facebook headsets, can hang out with other people. And it is very seductive. And human beings are very good at, you know, You know, like anthropomorphism, where we give human characteristics to machines, but we're also good at making sort of fabricated things seem real to us. So the fact that, you know, this avatar doesn't really look very human at the moment, it still feels like there's a person in the room with you, and you still behave, because we weren't programmed, we weren't evolved over millions of years to deal with this new technology. So our brains are trying to make the best of a very novel situation, and it behaves as if that person is really with you. And that's why people can, I don't know, fall in love in long-distance relationships, even over a basic phone line, much less a video link, much less a virtual space.
Fezzy, so, I find this absolutely terrifying. I don't know if it's just me.
Well, no, I'm glad you've grasped the concept.
It's terrifying, because for me, it is Total Recall meets Tron meets the Matrix, and I feel that this is not a position, or it's not a space that I want to be in. I mean, right. I find Zuckerberg frightening enough anyway, about everything that he knows about us already. You know, everybody knows that you go and have a look, where am I thinking of going on holiday, and then all the adverts pop up on your Facebook page every 5 seconds, so you know that's already happening. So it's so scary.
I know. I would just share this with you. When I was preparing the email to send you today, I copied and pasted an image of Mark Zuckerberg, and it twice crashed my computer, and that never happens. I'm not saying like Antichrist or anything, but you know, something strange was going on. That doesn't happen to my computers. My computers are very stable, and yet someone doesn't want their image copied and pasted.
I tell you what, Fezzy, let's have a song, and then let's come back and chat some more, because this is really great. Thank you. And the second part of my chat with Fezzy, if you're searching for him on Twitter, @GadgetDetective, and if you missed the first part, basically Mark Zuckerberg is sitting in a dark room and he's building a meta universe, and it's going to suck us all in, and it's going to be like living in the Matrix and Tron. That's about it in a nutshell, isn't it?
That's it. You don't need me. I'll get my coat now. That's it in a nutshell. Well done.
Now, the other thing you do on Bill's show is you do your gadget of the week. And I'm very interested in that, because we've got a similar product at home. But I'm interested in this one that you're talking about.
Okay, so this is a product from a company called Omron. And Omron are best known for making blood pressure monitors. And when you go and visit your GP, when we used to be able to go and visit our GPs, more than 9 times out of 10, you'd see an Omron blood pressure monitor on their desk. So these things have got a good heritage. And you've been able to buy Omron blood pressure monitors for the home for a long time.
Yeah, I've got one.
So this is a blood pressure monitor from Omron. It's called the Omron Complete. But it's quite a unique and ingenious device, because in addition to being a fully featured blood pressure monitor with cuff and, you know, all the functionality that goes with a top end one, it has a second function. It has the ability to monitor your heart's rhythm.
Ooh,
it is effectively producing an ECG with one lead. Okay, so a full ECG is a 12-lead ECG, and it sort of takes measurements of your heart from lots of different angles, if you like. This is a one-lead ECG. The way that you use it, let me explain, and then I'll explain why you would want to do this. So the device sits on the tabletop, and you've got the cuff on. Whilst you've got the cuff on, you put your thumbs on these metal pads on the left and right of the device, and you let your hands go down the sides of the device, and 2 or 3 fingers from each hand touch these pads. So there's 2 pads on the side, 2 pads on the top. And what that does is you link it to an app on your smartphone. Smartphone slots into a little cradle on the device itself. And you see it drawing a little ECG as it measures your heartbeat and the rhythm of your heart. But it's got some smarts in it. It's got artificial intelligence in it, which actually can work out if you're suffering from a form of arrhythmia, that's to say an unstable, irregular heartbeat. And why is this important? Why should we care about this? There is a form of arrhythmia, one of the most common forms, called atrial fibrillation, also known as AFib or AF. That's the most common form. In this country, there are about 1.5 million people who are diagnosed with this condition. But there are about, we think, another 250,000 who have it, are walking around with it and don't know. Then why is this important? The reason it's important is that people who have AF, if they're not treated and there is treatment for it, their risk of stroke is 5 times that of the average. it's hugely increased risk of stroke. Mm-hmm. Because what happens with AF is people get palpitations, their heart quivers, it doesn't beat regularly all the time. Usually it's fine, but they go into AF. When that happens, because the chambers of the heart are not working as they're meant to be, some of the blood doesn't get pushed out of the chamber and it eddies, it pulls and it becomes clotted. If the blood clot forms, and then it can travel to the brain and the person gets a stroke. And people with AF are potentially five times more likely to get a stroke, and that stroke is far more likely than the average to be debilitating or even fatal. So AF is involved in 20% of all strokes, and the risk of AF sufferers getting a stroke is five times. Now, you know, why would you want to know that if you can't do anything about it? You can. Right, AF is not easily curable, but it is manageable. And one of the things that they do for people often with AF is that they put them on anticoagulant drugs to thin their blood, to reduce the risk of stroke. So it really behoves people to know, because some people have no symptoms. Other people will feel a little bit of palpitations from time to time, but think nothing of it. And even if they think something of it, they're not going to be in a doctor's room or in a hospital at the time and have the machinery to do it. So the idea is, when you do your regular blood pressure check, and we should all check our blood pressure from time to time without being obsessive about it, then you just rest your thumbs and your fingers on the pad at the same time, and you get this little readout. And most of the time, for most of us, it will say absolutely fine. It'll say sinus rhythm. That means regular rhythm. But if not, it will flag it, okay? It will produce a PDF document, you know, and that's one you can email to yourself from your phone, and more importantly, email to your doctor. Your doctor can then get it, because a lot of people where they suspect they have AF, you know, they give them a 24-hour monitor to wear, but, you know, excuse my language, but sod's law is that you don't get an AF attack whilst you're wearing the monitor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so this device can pick it up, and it just becomes a normal part of doing your measurements. I particularly like the fact that the pads are built into a tabletop device, because it means that even people who are quite elderly and frail and may have known AF and we just need to monitor it, can use the device. You know, there are smaller handheld devices that do similar thing, because there's a company called AliveCore, which is now a part of Omron, and they worked together to create this and built it into this device. So it's a really, really good device. It's a couple of hundred quid, which is, I guess, about £130 more than you would pay for a good quality blood pressure monitor on its own. Yeah. So it's not nothing, but, you know,
could be a lifesaver. Could be.
It will literally be a lifesaver, because, you know, the British Heart Foundation is literally on a hunt to find that 250,000 people. We're trying to track them down and find them and help them before something bad happens. And that, but, you know, it doesn't need to be, one doesn't need to be sort of obsessive and scared by this. Just do your blood pressure from time to time, and when you're doing it, just pop your fingers on there, and it's all good. And most of the time it'll be reassuring, and if it's not, then it's just time to have a conversation with your GP.
Fezzy, thank you so much. If you want to find out more, Fezzy's got a website. It's www.gadgetdetective.com, or if you want to get on Twitter, Gadget Detective. Thank you so much, Fezzy.